So up next, we have Steve Chilton, who talked earlier on. The idea of the talk earlier on, because it's more interactive, this giving, Steve wants to give a talk about some of the stuff he does. So I said earlier on, he's a professional cartographer. He's actually the chair of the Society of Cartographers, who are a UK cartography society. Useful information. An international cartography society, and they do various stuff to promote cartography, and they're very forward-looking, and they're very interested in OpenStreetMap, and through guys like Steve, he's bringing the word of OpenStreetMap to them and teaching us all kinds of things about cartography. So I'm going to hand over to Steve.
Okay.
With...
Here Be Dragons.
Here Be Dragons.
Okay, I do apologise for being up here twice today. I did think of dressing up slightly differently, but that never quite happened. So you're stuck with the same look and feel. Here Be Dragons. I'll explain the title later, but it's actually some principles of cartography and OpenStreetMap. This is a slightly more serious me than the one earlier on today. We need to start with a little bit of theory. I've heard many people, particularly the neo-geographers, saying that basically everyone can draw maps now, and that's probably true. I have nothing against that, I'm all for that. What I have got a problem with is the resulting maps that sometimes we see. There's a lot of people producing not very good maps, in my opinion. And there's an expression that's been bandied around called red dot fever. And it may or may not have been introduced to the world by one of us present, Skylar Earle. I'm not sure if it was or not. But it's the proliferation of what was the original Google default of red flags on maps. And as I think Richard was alluding to, there's still a lot that are still very basic in that sense. And I want to just talk about some of the principles of cartography that I learned when I was a student that have some application to what we're doing to produce map output as part of our project. In most people's eyes, cartography isn't an art. It's not the same as music, writing, poetry, or any of those arts. But I would maintain there is an artistic part to cartography. It is an art and a science. And I think the art part, so to speak, does get forgotten sometimes. And I think I just want to refocus on that. But basically, an unattractive map will probably lose the audience in the same way as a website with too many step-throughs and clicks will lose your audience. I maintain that an unattractive map will lose your audience, perhaps. And an attractive map probably meets the function of the map more likely than an unattractive one. And one of the important things to consider is appropriate decisions about style, colour, size, and all the elements within the map. And as we've heard and we'll hear over these couple of days, one of the beauties of the OpenStreetMap project is the fact that you can do things yourselves. You can change things. You can change the way things look. That is its advantage. But again, as Andy pointed out about the framework for the tagging scheme, that has an advantage and a disadvantage element to it. And I hope to be able to illustrate part of that with you this afternoon. There's a whole study of visualization. We haven't got time to go into that, and I don't intend to go into that. But suffice it to say that the points, lines, and ways, the points, lines, and areas of the theoretical model are exactly matched by the nodes, segments, and ways that have established through the evolving project that's been described before you early on today. So let us apply some of these principles. I'm going to give you a little bit about I've mentioned the red dot fever, a little bit about typology of graphic variables, all frightening big words, but we'll get there, I think. Something about figure-ground relationship, which may or may not mean anything to you, but I hope to demonstrate why it's important. Hierarchical graphic organization, very, very briefly color theory, and a little bit about automated text and symbol location. That's where I'm going. I do need to just give a disclaimer. My comments are personal views, and it is in no way an attempt to be critical of the individuals involved in the project, particularly in terms of the output through the two standard devices, OsmoRender and MapNIC. I just feel I need to say that before I perhaps do say one or two things that might appear to be on that level of constructive, I hope, criticism. So just to put it in perspective, the OSM project is producing a scale-free database. How it renders that data is the important next step. But you have to make decisions that are affecting those things right from the start. You'll have situations where you've got two items that share the same geographical space. I think there's been discussion about double-decker bridges, right? You might have a railway line and a road line following exactly the same, if you're using the centre line analogy, exactly the same geographical space. And traditionally, and the same thing might happen with not exactly in the same space, but canals and canal towpaths are in a very close proximity, and you have to deal with that aspect of it. Traditionally, cartographers would use a bit of cartographic license and possibly move one of them in order to better show it. And traditional maps, because they had some fixed scale, would probably allow you to do that. My argument is that you shouldn't do that in the OSM database. You should map the things exactly as they are in the real world and let the project work through the possibilities of rendering or dealing with those aspects as it comes to them. Put them where they really are. There are situations as well where topology, the actual linkage between items, has got to be very carefully constructed. And you need to make sure you're not doing things like sharing nodes between things that don't naturally share nodes. If you've got a road and a stream, for instance, they probably aren't going to be sharing the same nodes. There's an exception to that. If there's a ford or something, it's probably going to do that. But in theory, they should be discrete. And the topology of the way you construct the lines that produce the road system or whatever it might be needs to be consistent. And I think there's an aspect of that that we perhaps need to look at some point or other. Okay, just a very brief illustration. I do apologise a little bit for being a cheapskate and nicking these from a standard textbook, and they may not be that readable to you. But basically, there's three columns on the screen which show point, line, and area data, and 9 different variations in style that you can apply to graphic variables. I'm only just putting that there because I just want to remind you that there's a kind of theory that's been expanded over many years that you are not necessarily instructed or informed by, but it is there and it has some bearing on what happens next. There's a very significant difference to what happens that you can make when you're actually doing your surveying in the field, and it's illustrated not particularly well by, again, an illustration from Robinson's classic book on elements of cartography, I believe it's called. I don't know if you can see it particularly well, but the bottom of the illustration where the X is, there's quite a high frequency of data recording points, and there are less of them as it goes up towards the top right of the screen. That has an effect on what actually happens, as I'm going to explain in a graphic illustration. On the left-hand side is a typical wandering linear feature, curvilinear feature. There's a set of equally spaced GPS points and a set of segments joining them up in the standard way. That's one way that you might produce the result on the right-hand side. You could take a different sampling interval using the same basic line, and the sampling interval is expanded for whatever reason. You're trying to save memory space on your device, whatever it might be, and it can produce that set of dots which will join up in that way. And if you refer back to the original illustration, it's exactly the same curve, sampled in a different way, producing a rather different version of the representation in the map database. Just got to be wary of that. Data richness itself causes its own problems. You've got to remember as well, when you get back home, you may only have those GPS points as a reference point. Have you any supplementary information? Are you making any supplementary information that will help you? Okay, ignore the fact that these are there. When you get back home, you might just have these. And the natural thing is to join them up in that way. But if you've made some kind of a sketch in the field or done something to annotate it, I would argue that it's probably better to have a line that wanders in some similar fashion to that than one that actually necessarily follows the geographical alignment in the first place. So I might have annotated that saying it was a winding country road or something. And I can't tell from my device how many points I'm going to get. I know what interval I've set, but I don't necessarily know what points I'm going to get to represent that. So I do tend to make notes and annotate things in the field in order to try and make sure that is the case. Okay, figure-ground relationship. What does that mean? What I want you to do, I'm going to put an illustration up on the screen. I want someone from the audience to shout out the name of the peninsula that is shown in the diagram is a white peninsula which terminates at a point at the north end of the peninsula. Can you tell me where in the world this peninsula is? Where is that white peninsula? California?
Italy.
Italy, absolutely. Okay, the way you use figure-ground relationships affects the person's ability to understand what you're representing. Okay, someone thought it was the Californian peninsula. The B illustration starts to use the contrast between the two elements, and I think you probably agree that the fourth one has actually given you a lot more clues to actually what happens. It's got a name on it, but the point I'm making is that the relationship between what isn't there and what is there is very important. And I think that was illustrated in the Osmo render layer when there was quirks in the way the C rendering was starting to happen. And it confused people considerably. That was a technological problem, but I think you can perhaps see where I'm coming from. Okay, I just want to talk about adjacent areas of colour. I've picked a particular area near me in Enfield in North London, and again, I've used an Osmorender version and a Mapnik version of the rendering. You may or may not be able to see. Again, it's coloured by the coloured. It's affected by the fact that it's projected. But on the left-hand Osmorender version, there's some footpaths in this part of the woods because the contrast between the symbols hasn't really been differentiated enough. I would argue that you can't see it as clearly as the one on the right-hand side. I'm not saying Osmorender's not any good. I'm not saying Mapnik is brilliant. I'm just saying in that particular situation, the relationship between figure and ground has affected what you're actually able to interpret. There is also a problem, probably on both of them, with the lake in the woods. If you look at the tonal variation of the colour of the blue against the green, it doesn't really help to stand out against each other. And those sort of things aren't really thought about, particularly, I don't think, when people are making decisions, but they do have an effect on the overall result that you get. This is an absolutely appalling illustration, for which I apologise, because again, I was a bit of a hurry trying to find something about hierarchical graphic organisation. Again, it's taken from the Robinson text, and it's a very poor diagram that illustrates the USA highway network and it attempts, by use of hierarchical symbolisation, to differentiate between interstate, presumably national, state and county level road network in the USA. I would contend that there's not a logical hierarchical organisation of the data displayed in this left-hand rendering. Okay, it's got two huge great place name allocations, Potter's Bar and Mimms, which is part of South Mimms, but it hasn't got any other textual information in there. And it's possible that how dominant is that railway line to you? How dominant is that colour to you? What actually are you expecting to be dominant in an image of the rural North London, Hertfordshire area? So decisions that we are making as we go along have an effect on the output. If someone has looked at the illustration of the UK that is rather nicely rendered and displayed on the wall outside, that has got a nice look and feel to it. I actually quite enjoy looking at it just now and seeing that. That's a good representation of that level of data. And that should follow through in the different levels. And I think if you do an analysis of some of the levels of the rendering information in both versions of the renderers, there's probably still some decisions that we need to make about that aspect. I mean, one of the things that came out when we were in the Lake District last weekend is some of the in urban areas, the frequency of points of interest does govern at what point you bring them in. There's decisions being made about at what level you bring in the pubs and do you bring in the pub name at the same level or on the next level down? And the points of interest come in sometimes at different levels, but sometimes it's because of the distribution in the urban areas that those decisions are made. And I think I noticed, and I don't know if anyone else thought it, but in the stuff we're doing in the Lake District, the points of interest that we were using there might have been the peaks or something that were much more widely distributed and probably should have been in an earlier level than they were, because I think when the decision was made, it may have been made at the meeting that was referred to earlier on, I can't really remember, but the decision was made that it was a rural thing, let's put it fairly well down the stack, and I just feel that it should have been hierarchically higher up the structure, because in terms of what Nick was talking about in countryside mapping, the peaks are very much an important feature of what you want to know about. Just on the aspect of graphical illustration, a lot of people have devised their own symbols, often in the SVG notation, and some really good icons and really good symbols are in use. And I think I might have referred earlier to mimetic symbols, which are ones that imitate the reality. But one of the other things that kind of needs to be standardised, and I'm not even sure that it is or isn't, but I suspect it isn't, is that there needs to be a standard control point that those symbols are referred to and placed by, because that affects where the symbols get placed. I don't know what you do when you're mapping. If you're mapping a pub, how far away from the road centre line do you put the pub symbol, the node? It's a bit of an arbitrary decision when I do it, I must admit. And the same occurs if you're labelling an individual car park, which you're just going to do as a node and not an area. And sometimes you think after you've seen it afterwards, oh, actually the symbols come right over the road or whatever it might be. If there was a standard thing like the bottom left-hand corner or something like that that was always used as an insertion point, it would make those sort of things less likely to be problematic. And the other thing to remember about symbols and style of symbols is that at the current version of the Slippy map output, there is no key to tell people, right? So where there's differentiation in lines, for instance, in footpaths and all that sort of thing, is it something that follows a kind of a standard that's been established in other mapping cycles that people will understand, or is it not? I don't know. Are the symbols suitably self-illustrating when they're points of interest? Most of them probably are, but I would certainly argue, and I suggested to Nick at one point that he's got space on the free map display to have a key of those different symbols, because I think he's got even more footpath types and symbol types on the free map version than are in the Slippy map. But yes, they need to make sense and they need to be explainable in some way. All right, colour. I'm not going to bore you with colour theory because I'm bored by it, frankly. But there is a logic to the arrangement of colour that you can actually use. If you're using a single colour, the top line is just a progression from white to dark red that works. If we're using what's called a bipolar colour, the second line is progression from blue to red through white. And if you're using black and white, they're all fairly obvious things, but I don't think too many people are thinking about that process when they say, let's give this new feature that we've got, this particular colour. It's possible that a more logical approach could be applied. And again, I'm not wishing to be critical, particularly of the renderers, but I find a slight visual clash going on here to me. And I just think that in both cases, there's probably an argument for saying that we could have a much more visually pleasing output if we thought more holistically about the way we use colours rather than just adding another symbol and choosing a colour that hasn't already been chosen. And that's the sort of thing that I would hope that people like myself and anyone else who's interested could have some kind of chance to be influential in that area. Okay. Just moving on, place name locating hierarchy. There's a whole theory about that. This is just a simple model, and basically a lot of algorithms step through. I don't know what MapNIC does. I don't really understand how MapNIC does it, but it seems to do it quite logically. And there's a step through of logical placements on nodes that you can work through. But it has an effect on what happens to the output. Sometimes on Osmerenda, you get things that you really don't want to happen. Enfield Chase Railway Station is right across the name of whatever that road is. There's a road here called He Tao, right? It's actually the town, but Osmerender can't deal with that fact that he hasn't got enough space to put it in. It might be a slightly logical thing. Mapnik actually drops it and then does a little bit of tweaking of the placement on the station and road name one. And so those sort of things are problematic. They're things that we've got to cross. I'm going to wind up by just explaining why I chose Here Be Dragons. That image, I think, came the other day for no reason at all from York, I think it was, or someone like that. Historically, cartographers have said, OK, there's some big space on my map, I'll put something there. And the urban myth is that he always used to say, Here Be Dragons, on those white spaces. And after extensive research by someone else, I found one single example of an old historical map where it actually says, Here Be Dragons, and it was in Latin on a map in 1511. But notwithstanding this, there is a useful thing you can do. This is a map from Munster, 1546. Got a whole load of sea down here, and he's put some boats and some fish-eating boats and stuff like that just to fill the space. And you can get people who can produce maps of Wales totally made of dragons. But remember that OSM itself has got its own way of dealing with those white spaces that it hasn't got any data for. Coming soon. So there are three, in my view, just to conclude, there are three problems in non-manual cartography. That's a long-winded way of saying there's three classic problems that we've got to solve at some point or other. And that is generalization. Okay, do we have the ability to produce generalized version of line works and things like that as the scales change? Do we have the ability to deal with type placement problems that I've identified earlier on? And do we have the ability to deal with overlaying detail one on top of the other? System of layers or transparency or whatever it might be. And I say those are the three major challenges really that face the project. There are algorithms extant to do those very tasks. And our task as a project is to incorporate these principles and techniques as the project develops, solving the problems. I'm sure it will be an interesting ride. So just finally, I'm going to just take one moment just to be self-publicising. I say, as Nick pointed out, I'm the chair of the Society of Cartographers. The website for the organisation is there, and there's a conference in 2 months' time at the University of Portsmouth, which is some material downstairs. Somebody once said this map thing could take off or something. I can't remember who it was and when they said it, but if that map thing is taking off in your mind and you want to know a little bit about more about the cartography and the possibilities, do pick up one of the leaflets from downstairs and consider coming along to the conference in Portsmouth in a couple of months' time. Thank you very much.
Any questions for Steve?
Two things. First of all, in reference to a key, it's the first thing that people who I show the map to say to me is, where's the key? One thing that I'd been wondering about that is whether we could... one of the problems about putting a separate key on the map is that whenever the map schema, the map drawing schema is changed, then the key's got to be changed as well to keep up with it. And it's, of course, it's different at different zoom levels. Whereas, and somebody on the mailing list the other day said, well, why don't we have a sort of artificial city? But we don't have to have just an artificial city. What we could do is just put an example of each kind of object that we want to draw and put it somewhere well known in the main database so that it's not separate from the rest of the data, and then it'll show up just like any other data at the same time. And if you say show me the key, it'll take you to that location, and the obvious one to me seems to be 00. But
your suggestion is not to put it on the surrounding area of the slipping map but link to another
you could do it either way, but the fact is that it would be rendered as part of the same process as produces the maps, and therefore it's guaranteed to keep in step.
I was halfway through adding a key link to a map key wiki page.
Yeah, but that means you've got to keep the page up
well,
to date.
Well, I don't, but...
No, well, some yeah, well, that, if that
I mean, I can stop doing it. I thought that was going to be the easiest thing to do.
If that linked to, say, 00...
Yeah.
Which is obviously not used for anything else apart from mistakes, then it would be automatically kept up to date and be right for the different zoom levels as well, which is why I was thinking of it like that.
Steve, you've got another hour. Don't stop. You've got another hour to get finished by.
Second thing was the Here Be Dragons title of your talk, which I was hoping it might be about, is the is having some way to know as a consumer of the map how much I can rely on it. Now, obviously, you can't. If somebody deliberately does something stupid, then obviously you can't rely on that either. But most of us know, in the area we've worked on, the bits where there's bits missing still to be done. And I would love to be able to show those on the map. And there are a couple of proposals in the for doing that from various people, but none has really sort of moved forward. So I think that's one of the biggest problems for somebody coming into the to look at the map as a user is this map actually going to tell me anything useful? Or I mean, like Manchester, that the map to get here from Piccadilly Station is missing a whole swathe of streets over that side, and I didn't know whether that was true, whether there just weren't any streets there. I thought it was unlikely. But there are streets in this immediate area, but they're not all there. So I didn't know which streets to go down. If I'd followed the map, the OSM map, then I would have been misled.
Just there's kind of two questions there. One is about the accuracy, and one is about the the non-availability of data. And I'm not sure that we can deal with the accuracy aspect of the fact that the way the data is generated.
No, I just want to be able to say, I'm halfway through mapping Ely. This area in the north of the city has got some roads there, but it's not complete, so don't rely on it. This area is complete, and you can rely on it.
I've actually thought about that before. I can't think of a way to do it, because you could have linear feature of some sort that said not mapped, but you'd have to continually revise it as you did it, and I just don't think it's a process
I just do it as part of the process of producing the map in that area.
Right, okay.
Don't some people leave ... nodes in areas that they're mapping? Does anyone here do that?
Yeah.
Yes, I mean, that's the way that people are doing that at the moment to represent something. But sorry?
That's not rendering.
Sure, but that's a choice of the renderer, so it's there to be done.
I mean, I had a bit of a quandary about when we were in the Lake District. I was riding my bike doing mapping, and I decided to map any time I saw a formal footpath off to the side or a service road or a bridleway, but I wasn't going down it. So do I just leave a little branch of that thing visible and hope someone else picks up on it? Or is it misleading to have these little stems actually showing? I don't know. Is this things around about?
Well, let's all hack on Osmerendra and Mapnik in the pub tonight. See what we can get done. So we're going to have to cut the questions there for this talk. We can carry on later. But cheers, Steve.
Okay.